Like sometimes people just kind of drop off, but the actual just sort of like daily code metrics is a complete disaster. It's not how the, it's not how the work works.
Yeah. If you want to judge me by lines of code, I could write lots of lines of code.
Yeah. Be careful what you incentivize for. Today's episode is brought to you by Refinitiv. Refinitiv is transforming global markets by combining over a century of market data excellence with cutting-edge technologies. Join the Refinitiv developer community and access a full pool of community tools with native Python support. Go to refinitiv.com/stackpodcast to check it out. Refinitiv, data is just the beginning. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Stack Overflow podcast. This week, we are going to have a two-part episode. Part one will air today, and part two will air on Friday. So hope you enjoy. When you get to the end, just know, to be continued, tune back in Friday for the rest of the conversation. Thanks. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast. I'm your host, Ben Popper, here with my co-host, Paul and Sarah. How's it going, y'all?
Getting by in a crazy mixed up world.
Yeah. That's right. It's happening.
That's how this song goes. And we have some great guests with us this week, John and Adam. Sarah, you want to introduce?
Yeah. So we have John Chan and Adam Lear, who are both on our community engineering team. I'll let them introduce themselves. But one thing we've been hearing from folks is that they'd like to know a little bit more about how Stack Overflow gets built. And so they're great candidates to talk about what they experience every day.
Glad to be here. I'm Adam. I'm on, as Sarah said, community team. Been at Stack Overflow for about 8 years, 8 years and change. And when I first started, I was actually a community manager and did that for a couple of years and then went back to being a developer. And here I still am.
All right. My name is John Chan. I am the engineering team lead for the community team. I've been with the company now for about 6.5 years. I started off working on our talent product, actually, trying to help people find jobs on Stack Overflow, and have since been with Stack Overflow and now on the community team. That's it.
So Adam, tell me a little bit about how you came to know the Stack Overflow, Stack Exchange community. And I think that was your route in to sort of moderator and then employee.
Yeah. So this was back in 2010, I want to say, something like that. You know, I found Stack Overflow and I got really into kind of the idea of kind of Q&A communities and these ones in particular. And I joined what at the time was the Programmers Stack Exchange beta. And now that site is called Software Engineering, got renamed a few years ago. But it was kind of the softer, more process-oriented side of Stack Overflow, less about code, more about software kind of architecture, and, hey, software engineering. And I was a relatively new developer at the time, so that kind of appealed to me a lot more, got really into it, became a moderator from there, became a moderator on Stack Overflow, kind of got fed back into that level of involvement. And then, I had a chance to meet the community manager team at the time, and things worked out, and I ended up with a job out of that.
That's great. And how did you switch over from being a community manager to being an engineer? And what do you think that makes you a different kind of engineer on the team?
I mean, I was already an engineer before I became a community manager, so it was less of a career switch. It was more I kind of took this little break for a couple of years because my previous engineering job was really getting me down. And in terms of kind of how I, you know, went back to engineering, I literally just, you know, talked to a couple of people. The team was hiring again, and I felt like I wanted to get back to coding. So I went through kind of a condensed interview. We really didn't have fully defined interview process like we do now, but even then, we still had a few things. So yeah, during one of the company meetups, I spent an afternoon going through, I think, 3 different questions and whatnot, kind of prove that yes, I can actually code. Learned some web development because I hadn't done it up to that point. And then, yeah, once the timing was right, I officially changed teams. I think it does kind of, any sort of outside experience or any sort of different industry experience always helps, always makes you a different kind of engineer, right? You get a different perspective on something. So in this case, I feel like I have a different perspective on how our communities operate. It is a few years out of date, but I still have kept up, you know, close ties with the community managers and hopefully with the communities as well.
That's great. For those of you listening that were born after 1995, yes, there are types of development that aren't web development.
Oh, you're talking about mobile development.
Yeah.
I just want to know kind of like, what do you guys do all day? Like, what's your day to day? Maybe starting with John.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I started off as an engineer at Stack Overflow, and only recently, actually, I think it's my 1 year anniversary today, becoming a manager at Stack Overflow. And, you know, my day to day is making sure that the team is, you know, as productive, feeling as good as they possibly can, so that they can, you know, build out the features that we have on Stack Overflow. So my day is mostly doing a lot of the things, hopefully, that engineers don't really want to be doing. So having all the meetings, you know, reviewing a lot of the specs, making sure that things are ready to go so that by the time that it actually gets to an engineer like Adam on the team, it's actually ready to go and we can really just get started with trying to see, you know, how certain features are going to be working on an A/B test, figuring out whether or not, you know, a way that we're going to be doing review queues is going to be different and will be more effective. So my day-to-day is a lot of meetings, a lot of writing, a lot of reading, and it's a little bit different than what I was doing back when I was an engineer.
What about you, Adam?
My day, I think, is probably more what you'd expect for an engineer. My day is code, for the most part. So there is kind of with seniority come meetings. So and hours and hours of calls. In a typical day, I'll usually have maybe a couple scheduled meetings. John actually, I think, takes care of the brunt of all of that, but still. And then, yeah, I usually have a project that I'm primarily working on that I'm responsible for, and then just kind of different assorted things. There's bug fixes. You know, if somebody notices a bug, either a user or somebody internally, I usually get pinged about that to kind of, you know, for a first pass because people know who I am, apparently. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm fixing it, but hear a lot about all of those issues. And a lot of code reviews. We're working on dark mode right now. So Aaron, our designer, who's really working on it, he just fires off all of these pull requests towards me.
Wow.
Well, towards our team. I usually end up looking at them because I'm now the most familiar with them.
Still working on dark mode. Like we had someone on to talk about dark mode, right?
Yeah, Aaron.
Yeah. That was Aaron.
Okay. So this is like this. I love this, right? Because this is, it just shows you'd think dark mode would be shipped. And this is not to make fun of Stack. This is just software. Like, no, dark mode is never done. You have a new child that you have to take care of called dark mode.
Well, it's in beta right now. We're growing the child. We're teaching it how to walk.
In the dark. I mean, it's hard. It's, you know.
Exactly.
Well, go back to one thing. You know, you were talking about the team. Both of you are on a team. Like, what is the team? Like, how big is the team? Just a little bit of dynamics there.
Yeah, sure. I can say a little bit more about this. So, you know, it's interesting when it comes to the community team, it feels like one of the ways to think about it is that there's sort of like concentric circles. Right. So when you talk about the core development team, the team that both me and Adam are, we have, I'd say, it's now 6 people that is on the engineering side. So myself, Adam Lear, Jakob Ellis, Brian Nickel, Jane Wilborn, and Christina Lustig. And, you know, we're the core of the people that are actually writing code day to day, right? Actually shipping those features. There's a larger sort of like squad that's there that, of course, includes other departments as well. So product managers, we have 2 product managers on our team. We have 1 designer, 1 researcher as well. But, you know, that's sort of that middle circle that we have outside of there as well. And then if you talk about the larger circle, that also includes, you know, all of our community managers, as well as, you know, Sarah Chips, who is also leading a lot of our initiatives here as well. So you can think about it as, you know, 1 pretty large team with a lot of different layers to it, depending on how you're looking at it.
How many of those people are you talking to in the course of a given day?
Ooh, Adam, how many do you think that you actually talk to on a given day at this point?
Well, I think I definitely talk to the core group that you described and community managers. That I think are my 2 primary groups. I also talk a lot to the architecture team, but that's a little bit outside of the circles.
Right. So for me, it's a little bit different because if you also think about where the public Q&A platform is, it's at the intersection of almost all of our other lines of business too. So for me, I'm also talking to a lot of the other leads on other teams too, like for our jobs product or for our team's product. So mine's definitely sort of way outside of that particular circle and that sort of that core team that we have too.
John, is it hard? Like, it sounds like you might have a lot of stakeholders.
Yes, definitely.
So, I mean, look, I mean, we all have relatively complicated jobs where you have to deal with lots of people and people have demands and needs that overlap, right? So you've got a lot of people who might want slightly different things and you need to provide them to them. And like, what's your pattern for staying in touch, understanding what people need, like adding structure in your own world to all of those relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's where all those meetings start coming in, right? Like, if you take a look at my calendar, I don't think it's been this full in the last, you know, 5 years that I've actually been at Stack Overflow before I became a manager. You know, so having those standing one-on-ones, having those regular check-ins, and, you know, when you think about the way that even Stack Overflow as a code base is engineered, it's really interesting because it's sort of a really polymorphic kind of technology where, you know, all the different Stack Exchange sites that we have are essentially running on a very similar piece of code. It's one giant repository that sort of gets permutated into the Max Stack Exchange to Stack Overflow and even to some of the other products that you see on Stack Overflow, like Jobs and with Teams. And so what's really interesting is that, you know, we essentially have to have feelers in almost every area of the company here. And a really big part of that is just making sure that you have those rituals where you have that monthly checkpoint, where you're in those calls with, you know, the other 3 to 4 product managers that are thinking about how is, you know, features on public Q&A going to be affecting enterprise or Teams and vice versa. So it really is about, you know, having the FaceTime, having the conversations, making sure that you're communicating through those docs. And that's probably why most of my time is now spent on reading, writing, actually talking to people at this point.
Yeah, I would say that John definitely rates very highly for the emotional and empathetic capabilities that are needed to be a great engineering manager. It makes a lot of sense to me that you do those kinds of meetings. I also love that John, at least when we used to have an office, has a treadmill desk. I just want to point that out in case it gets lost in the wash.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's pretty sweet.
I miss it for sure being out here in Los Angeles with everything that's going on right now.
Yeah. How many miles would you do a day?
Oh, geez. Let's see. I try to keep it at like 2 miles an hour. That's about how long I can or how fast I can actually keep it. It's funny. There was a joke. I remember when I first got the treadmill, I think it was the very first one that I got it at Stack. And we had asked, you know, one of the people on our executive team, Alex Miller, about, you know, whether or not I could actually get it. And one of the things that came up really quickly after that was, you know what, we should probably hook that treadmill up to, you know, the API or something else so that the number of exceptions that go on will track to the amount of like speed that treadmill will go so that I'll probably just warp through bugs faster or something.
Somebody was telling me yesterday, I'm not exactly sure what company it was from, but it was a company that, you know, at this point in time is struggling. It's a tech company. They're thinking about furloughs or this or that, like we all are. And they were saying, oh yeah, they instituted this system last week. It tracks every line of code that the engineers write and reports that up. And they're now like rating engineers
by
productivity.
That's the worst idea I've ever heard in my entire life.
It didn't sound like a good idea, but that was the management
solution.
If you
want to destroy a company very quickly, that's like one of the most efficient paths you can take. And
some of my most productive days is when I actually delete code, not when I write something new.
It's tricky, right? Because there is actually an element of if somebody has no velocity at all and you just like you see that and you do know it and it's real. Although I will say, I'll bet you everyone is finally documenting their stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are so many inline comments that will automatically be refactored. There's so many documentation systems being installed right now.
All right. Before we jump off this and go back to what John and Adam do day to day, for a minute, let's game it out. If you had to build a system for upper management, I know it sucks, but how would you sort of track engineers to measure productivity in a way that's holistic and builds in the right incentives? This is to say, not like the real way, which is to talk to people and have a community and do meetings and pull requests and all those things. But like, is there an automated way you could do that? Maybe it's lines added and lines deleted. I don't know.
I think that, well, I thought about this a lot. And I think, first of all, an effective way to do it is as a team rather than an individual.
Yeah, it's feature velocity, not code velocity. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, are teams making their commitments? Are we delivering the same amount of work iteration after iteration? I've been in a lot of meetings where people have tried to, like one time I was in a meeting with an executive, not at this company, who said, okay, so you get through so many story points. How many story points does this person normally get through? Because if we can figure out, we can divide their salary by story points. I was like, So I think, at least that's my opinion, team-wise, it's effective.
That's always the fantasy, right? That you can somehow control people in that way. And it's not, it doesn't work. The thing that I see is like, here's the archetypal case that we're working around, which is we have this really crappy grid view built into our system that somebody hacked together 5 years ago. I went and I took our front end system and I found an open source grid view component that's like 10 lines of code to implement. and I feed it the data structure, and it basically works. I do a few tweaks. I've just cut about 25,000 lines of code out of the system, and I've done what looks like no work. I've done like half a day's work, but I have saved like $500,000 at least in development time over the next 2 to 3 years. You're not going to give me $500,000. You're not going to give me a 10% bonus. You're not going to give me $50,000 for installing that library. So there's a real, like, it kind of goes both ways. And this always is like, how do I commoditize the humans to make them write more code? As opposed to like, what is the true incentive system? Like, you know, if you really want that, then you actually have to provide an incentive system for people who save money going forward.
Y'all have a different, a different stakeholder. You're kind of like shoemakers making shoes for other shoemakers, right? Like something that is scarier than executives that want to quantify you by your story points can be millions of developers who want to tell you how to do your job. So how do you...
That's right. What is it like developing Stack when everyone has an opinion on how Stack should be?
You know, it's really interesting. Well, yeah, going back to... because I want to make a point here about, you know, how you think about measuring productivity, because this is something that I think quite a lot about when it comes to this team in particular. You know, we talked a lot about velocity, which is sort of like, you know, how many features can you sort of get out? How much productivity can you sort of get out the door? But another way that I really like thinking about this is when it comes to predictability. So when it comes to shipping code, right, when you're talking about estimating, trying to figure out when something's actually going to go out the door, if you think about it from the lens of predictability, like, okay, how much are we saying that we're going to be able to finish in the sprint? And how much of that do we actually sort of cross the finish line with? And are we actually predictable to all the other teams that are depending on our work? And this is actually goes to the second question you were asking about, which is so many people have so many different expectations about what Stack Overflow should be like, especially on the public Q&A platform. When we think about velocity here, it's much more easy to think about it in terms of predictability because you're talking about maintaining a social contract, essentially, between whoever, you know, we're serving when it comes to, you know, either public Q&A users or maybe another internal team here where it's like, hey, if we can deliver something that we said that we were going to deliver and we do it on time in a way that is not surprising to people, that's a big win in my book, especially with how sort of like intertwined the public Q&A platform is with so many of the other products that we have at Stack Overflow, but also with all the different audiences that we have on the Stack Overflow platform, right? If we get to a place with, you know, say the community where, you know, hey, we've said we're going to be able to do X, Y, and Z, and we're going to be building these features, and we're going to try to get as many of them out the door as we possibly can. If they're not exactly the things that, or if they're not necessarily exactly the things, but in line with what people are expecting on the community, on our other teams, then the velocity almost just doesn't matter, right? So when I think about how much, you know, what is the metric, what is the system that we could build so that we can start to satisfy all these different, you know, stakeholders that we have, predictability seems to be one of those things, and maintaining the social contract that you have with other teams, your customers, and our users in our community.
Hey, I'm glad that John has to worry about all that. But yeah, you know what? Honestly, like talking about working on Stack Overflow kind of in an extremely kind of noticeable and public way, I used to kind of joke that I still do, I guess, that, you know, one of the best things about this job is you get a lot of feedback. You get kind of a lot of it like really fast. And the worst thing about this job is you get a lot of feedback
yep,
and you get it
exactly.
really fast. And one thing it definitely has done for me is it's made me very careful about kind of, you know, making judgments about like other companies and other, you know, tools, video games, what have you. You know, used to be able to like, you know, go on Twitter and be like, oh my God, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. How could possibly anybody do it? And then, you know, having that done to me several times.
There's always a reason, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, and sometimes it just is that somebody made a really, really dumb decision. But most of the time, honestly, it's probably just some developer sitting there under constraints of their day-to-day just making the best decisions and the best things they possibly can.
Well, this is a field. This is our field. We make these decisions with completely imperfect information, and then usually someone else pays for them a couple years later. But it's rare that we have to pay for our own bad decisions in this business. It feels like people move around enough that there isn't that consequence.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of this video game Hearthstone for a while, and so I play that, but I also hang out in like the Reddit community that's following that game. Mm-hmm. And they are so mean to the developer team has become like a meme where they just like constantly dunk on the developer team, constantly point out bugs. And it's like this weird thing where people love the game. They love every new release. They get so excited. And then as soon as it's out, it's just immediately trying to slam all the developers for every mistake that they made, to a point where one of the developers went on, I think, Twitter and talked about how it was affecting them emotionally. And then there was a big Reddit thread about like, wait, maybe we've gone too far. Let's dial it back. Like, just to let you know, we really appreciate the game. Like, the developers had become, you know, sort of persona non grata in the community, or just like they had become the punching bag for the community.
It is true. Gamers, developers are a rough audience. Gamers are unbelievably, excruciatingly, purposefully toxic.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite, at one point in the earlier days of Minecraft, somebody made a chart of every single day that the developer of Minecraft, like where he was and that he went on vacation, and like literally just tracked all of his time. Oh, yeah. It's like one of the most toxic documents I've ever seen. And they kind of broke that guy. Like, he got very men's rights. Like, it is like real. Notch. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like why is the president golfing for the third time this month? And it's like, Notch, why are you eating lunch out when you could be coding new Minecraft?
It's a guy in a fedora and he's making a hat where the little cart goes up and down. And they're like, you have failed us. And it's like a $20 game. The key for, you know, what's tricky is the key for me. But, and Stack will prove that this isn't real. I used to believe that the deal was never take money. Like, the minute you take money, make sure you get enough, because if somebody gives you $40 or $5 or $2, they believe that they own you for the rest of your life. And nothing proves that more than like mobile apps, where it's like, I spent 99 cents on this 3 years ago and look at this trash. It won't even, you know, I can't even get the update. What's version two? But Stack is free. and it doesn't really matter when people feel when they own and feel invested. It's a wonderful thing, but boy, is it's not always the most wonderful thing every single day.
Let's do a lifeboat and then we'll say our goodbyes and where people can find us.
Sounds like a wonderful plan.
Okay. So every week on the podcast, we shout out the lifeboaters. People have earned the lifeboat badge, which means that there was a question that was asked. It was not going to make it. It was downvoted, didn't have an accepted answer. These folks came in and gave an answer. And the question was then got up to 20 votes and an accepted answer. So they saved a question and built some knowledge. We're at 998 lifeboats. So we're close to our big celebration of 1,000. And this one goes to Python 3 Data Class Initialization Thank You Young Gun, awarded 2 days ago.
Woohoo!
All right, I'm Ben Popper, Director of Content at Stack Overflow. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Popper.
I'm Sarah Chips. I'm Sarah J. Chips on Twitter. Check out devaroundthesun.org for ways to get involved with learning and raising money for COVID-19 victims.
I'm Paul Ford. I'm a friend of Stack and co-founder of a company called Postlight that builds software. And you can find me on FTrain and Twitter, but I'm going to go check out devaroundthesun.org and see what developers have gotten up to. Sarah usually gets involved in pretty good schemes.
So I'm Adam Lear. I'm a senior software developer at Stack Overflow. And if you really want to find me, I'm on Twitter at AA Lear.
All right. And I'm John Chan. I'm the engineering team lead for the public Q&A team. And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram on John HM Chan.
All right, everybody, that's it for today. But this is just part one of two. So please tune in again on Friday for some more great conversation with developers from Stack Overflow about how we build things internally. Thanks for listening.